You're listening to KTOO. I'm Jamie Deep, here with local and statewide news. Ketchikan's school district superintendent is resigning less than a week after the school board president stepped down. Michael Robbins announced Monday that he will be resigning at the end of the school year. Robbins has been Ketchikan's head school administrator for a little over 2 years. Previously, he was the principal of a small school in the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta. School board member Catherine Tatsuda told the Ketchikan Borough Assembly Monday night that the board hopes to begin interviewing potential replacements as early as next month. Robbins has recently been overseeing a process to restructure the island's elementary schools to meet the district's more than $1.6 million budget deficit. The plan was approved by the school board last month. It's been met with uproar in the community. Tatsuda told the Borough Assembly that she was concerned about moving forward with this process in light of Robbins' resignation.
Especially with Superintendent Robbins leaving and the shakeup in district leadership, I personally am concerned about making such a massive change that's been so controversial to district staff and then also the community and the impact on families.
Robbins announced his resignation in a four-sentence email to district teachers and staff. He said he'll be resigning on June 30th and looks forward to, quote, supporting a smooth transition in the months ahead. People with disabilities in Alaska face many obstacles in accessing services, and they want things to improve across the system. That's why they marched to the state capitol today with care providers and advocates.
Access for all! Access for all! Access for all!
Outside the capitol, nearly 150 people from around the state were chanting about disability rights and demanding improved services. Many are part of the Key Coalition, a nonprofit advocacy organization in Alaska that supports people with disabilities. Key Coalition Director Michelle Giroux says they advocate for the community as a whole since anyone can develop a disability at any point in their life.
It's not just today, it's tomorrow, so let's prepare and have services and accessibility for everyone whenever the need occurs, rather than having to wait for a service.
This year's priorities include improving the state's infant learning program, which supports infants with disabilities and developmental delays. Giroux says Alaska is one of the only states in the country where the eligibility threshold for services is a 50% developmental delay.
We want to reduce that to 25% to support more children, and in the end it saves more money because if you intervene early, then those kids don't need special education.
Nikki Basco owns Tides, a Juneau-based agency that provides care to people with disabilities. She says the coalition is also working to improve wages for care providers.
Everyone in their lifetime is going to need caregiving at some point, and we have a whole network of strong, passionate care providers. So we're here to support them as well and ask for living wage and to continue supporting Medicaid.
Kim Chamdy, one of the rally speakers, is executive director of the Alaska Association on Developmental Disabilities. She says legislators want to hear from more than just service providers.
It's really the voices of people, the family members, the people who rely on the services with us in partnership. We work together, we share our stories, and that's how we build the system that we need in the future.
Advocates spent the afternoon after the rally meeting with legislators and sharing their experiences. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Jamie Deep. And the next story includes details of possible animal abuse that some listeners might find disturbing. The remains of two French bulldogs that went missing on Prince of Wales Island over a month ago were found in a pair of crab pots last week. KRBD's Jack Darrell reports.
The dogs belonged to a Prince of Wales family, the Martins. Kane Martin says the dogs disappeared just before Valentine's Day. He'd taken them to work at a logging operation near Thorn Bay.
And we take the dogs to work with us every day, and it is run back and forth between us while we're working. And about 9:30, we didn't see him anymore, so referred to this one up and stayed at the pickup, but they didn't. Somebody came by up and picked him up.
Martin says he thinks someone abducted the dogs from Sandy Beach Road near the timber site. They were about a year old.
And they were great little dogs. I mean, just lovable as hell, and I'm sure that's why they just, you know, jumped in that rig with them.
Martin and his family posted flyers with pictures of the missing dogs, named Whiskey and Yoda. They advertised a $500 reward for their return. After a couple weeks without a lead, they doubled the reward. About a month later, Alaska wildlife troopers were hauling off shellfish pots around Thorn Bay Harbor. Routine inspections. And one of the pots had the remains of a dog in it. And then another one. Same thing. Troopers compared photographs and information from the Martins. They identified the dogs as Whiskey and Yoda. According to Martin, law enforcement dropped the pots back in the water to see if their owner would come back for them. But someone came in the middle of the night, took the pots. Trooper spokesman Austin McDaniel declined to share more information on the crab pots or their potential owner. He said the case is still being investigated and troopers are attempting to corroborate information from potential witnesses before sharing it with the public. Kane Martin says he's also personally offering a $2,500 reward for information on the people involved.
You know, the troopers had told me they thought it was something personal. And I mean, there's only one person on this island that has any kind of vendetta against me at all, and it's not even that much that I know of.
Anyone with information regarding the disappearance of the Bulldogs are encouraged to contact the Prince of Wales Trooper Post at 907-826-2291. In Ketchikan, I'm Jack Darrell.
The University of Alaska Fairbanks has shuttered the office and taken down the website for an on-campus center that supported cultural programs and diversity-related training. But university officials say plans to integrate the center's work with other offices were in motion before the Trump administration targeted DEI programming at educational institutions nationwide. KUAC's Patrick Gilchrist reports.
Hudson Boldu is the former coordinator for the Nanook Diversity and Action Center. He says he quit toward the end of 2024 after his mentor advised him to look for a new job due to the political climate.
When you work in DEI, you're very aware of anti-DEI pushes, whether it's internal, external, the community, etc.
An interim coordinator held the position after Boldu, but they moved on from the Diversity and Action Center in January. Then, earlier this month, Boldu got a call from the Rasmussen Library at UAF.
To let me know that they were going to archive the website so that they could historically document what had taken place. And so that's right around when I found out everything was getting pulled and that the website would just link to the Wood Center.
For years, the Diversity and Action Center has helped facilitate professional development trainings, first-generation college student initiatives, LGBT student initiatives, and Heritage Month celebrations. Staff also organized drag shows and other campus events. An email sent Monday to the university community from University of Alaska President Pat Pitney names the Diversity and Action Center as one of the casualties of a Board of Regents motion that passed in February. That motion directed the university president and chancellors to scrub websites, print materials, position titles, and office titles of all diversity, equity, and inclusion terminology. The motion says that's to comply with federal guidance and executive orders. On March 10th, UAF Chancellor Dan White notified faculty, staff, and students that he was carrying out that directive, despite resistance, saying the risk of losing federal funding posed an existential threat to the university. UAF Communications Director Marmion Grimes says the university intends to roll some of the Diversity and Action Center's functions into the larger Center for Student Engagement. And while the university removed the Diversity and Action Center's website after the Board of Regents motion, she says the plan to close the center's physical office surfaced earlier. That decision came after the last staff member left in January, predating Trump's inauguration.
The bottom line is that there were some two positions eliminated over the course of this, you know, reorganization. But there were no employees that were, like, laid off or anything. When we had the last employee leave, we, you know, took that opportunity to put that savings, you know, towards other stuff.
For Boldu, watching his old workplace go dark in person and online was both expected and sad. But, he says, one way or another, he expects the mission to persist.
Though the center can be removed, you can't really remove the fact that students, staff, faculty, we want to be able to promote safe spaces for students. We want to promote cultural diversity. We want to celebrate who is and who comes to UAF. So I don't think that will stop.
In Fairbanks, I'm Patrick Gilchrist.
And lawmakers narrowly rejected an executive order from Governor Mike Dunleavy on Wednesday that would have created a cabinet-level state agriculture department. Dunleavy's proposal would have split out the existing Division of Agriculture from the Department of Natural Resources. Dunleavy pitched it as a way to give farmers, ranchers, and other food producers a seat at the cabinet table, even after he's no longer governor. The combined House and Senate voted 32-28 to reject the proposal. Lawmakers in the largely Democratic coalitions that control the House and Senate said they supported the idea of a state agriculture department, but Representative Sarah Hannan, a Juneau Democrat, told her fellow lawmakers the governor's order was not the right approach.
Executive Order 136, as currently constructed and described before the Finance Committee, does not grow agriculture, it grows government. It appoints a commissioner, establishes administrative offices, and does not add $1 to our supports for food security.
Opponents said they would have preferred the governor introduce a bill creating the new department rather than an executive order. They say that's because there's little lawmakers can do to tweak an executive order in response to testimony from experts and the public. The most vocal supporter of the governor's agriculture department proposal has been Senator Shelley Hughes, a Palmer Republican. She chaired a legislative task force that wrote a lengthy report offering numerous recommendations for improving the state's food security.
Right now, if you were to open our report, you would see, Mr. President, that we did accomplish some things, but there's probably about 30 or so that we have not yet accomplished. And the only way they will be accomplished is if there's a Department of Agriculture, because you need someone to oversee that they happen.
Senate leaders said they plan to schedule hearings on bills that would create a state agriculture department in the near future. This is KTOL.